And not saying that, you know, other fighters are not supposed to be there, but this is what we come from. This is what I come from. I come from boxing. I come from a fighter that was a good puncher. I come from that. My left hook supposed to be deadly because my dad left hook was deadly. My body has no miles on it, for real, because I trained my body for certain things. My dad, I've really trained. So in the end result, it's not a lot of miles on his body. I live clean. So it's not a lot of miles on his body. It's just not. I believe I could beat whoever. If you put me in there. With David Benavidez, I said, come on, let's go. I'm just really inside. I'm really hurt about that subject, about that situation. I'm still in all hurt. And I think it's been 14 years since 2010. Yeah. And I'm still hurt. It still ain't go away. I still mourn that death. I still mourn that loss. I still cry about it like I just did. I'm historical. Talking about that situation still. And that subject is really, really a bad subject for myself. I try every day to get over that. I try every night to look on the bright side of things. And that shit just don't go away. It just don't.
Hello, and welcome to Boxing Life Stories with me, Tristix.
What happened in the ring after Tyson Oliver was child's play compared to that one?
Still a goosebumps to this day.
You couldn't take the tears from his eyes or the smile off his face, could you?
I know.
He's bitten me. He said, well, let's pull him back.
In the paper, they made me look like Al Capone.
This is going to be your night.
His winning and his nothing else.
Hello and welcome back to Boxing Life Stories. This week I'm joined by Philadelphia light heavyweight contender Jesse Hart. For those of you who have messaged me and said they're grateful to have Boxing Life Stories back, I really appreciate that. I'm very, very, very grateful. And it is actually down to, in part, Jesse Hart that it's back, because I was interviewing him. I was due to have a relatively, I think, short interview with him for Boxing Scene. And it was during a conversation with Jesse that was so natural, so easy and so comfortable, but also so moving that I thought, like, wow, this stuff needs to be on a podcast. And there was a couple of interviews like that, and Jesse was one of them, and he really stood out. And I always thought, like, you know, I need to be capturing these for the fighters, for their families, and hopefully for future generations. And you'll see why as this conversation progresses. I get a real kick out of talking to Jesse. I think we've developed a pretty good rapport over the last few months. And, you know, if you've looked on Boxing Scene, you might have seen my piece on grief in boxing. And Jesse's story is so unique and so tragic, but also potentially so special. And I'm just grateful that I know Jesse Hart. And it's funny because, you know, I've reached out to a couple of people subsequently, including at Top Rank. And I said, you know, what do you think of Jesse? And everybody loves Jesse Hart. They have so much time for him. They have so much love and respect for him. And I think you'll see why on this podcast. I mean, just to go over some cliff notes, Jesse was the son of Eugene Cyclone Hart, one of the great middleweights from that Philadelphia era of the 70s. He's now a longtime contender of himself and desperate to win a world title, something his father never managed to do and something that Jesse has so far been unable to do. But he's desperate to get over the line, and he is driven by the senseless murder of his brother in 2010, which was so graphic. I mean, Jesse has told me... basically, I mean, you'll hear the detail here, but his brother was shot in the head in Philadelphia, and it was a horrible scene, and the whole thing, the aftermath, has scarred Jesse deeply. And he said a couple of the very nice things about our conversations on social media subsequently, and I hope he gets something from them. I hope you enjoy this listen, which is hugely emotionally charged and very difficult. It made me wish that we weren't doing this via Zoom, but in person, so I could be there with Jesse, but I'm hugely grateful for him spending the time and going through his story with me. As I said last week, I would be remiss if I didn't shout out Blaz at Hanson Lee and Del at Delco Safety for the work they've put into this podcast over the years. But now I'll leave you with the truly incredible Jesse Hart.
Jesse, every time I see you on Box Rec, I see your face and your mugshot that you look so mean. And then when I see you, you're like all smiley and you light up and you got a very different personality to how you look on Box Rec, where you just got that mean expression.
It's business. That just be business. It's real life right now. And you know what I'm saying? You got to sell certain things. You got to sell. People buy into that type of stuff. So yeah, it's never personal. It's never, it's just business.
And then I suppose, you know, people who've been listening to my podcast over the years, we've just had a little break for a few months. We've done 250 episodes. We're coming back. You're one of the reasons why these guys are getting the podcast back, because we did an interview a couple of months ago for Boxing Scene. And I was like, damn, I could talk to that guy for a long time. And he was super interesting. And you got a great story. So it's partly down to you that the podcast has come back. So I think there'll be a few people that are grateful to you, because you got a hell of a story.
I appreciate that, man. But, you talk, though, it was real. I really felt like, you know what I'm saying, some tears was about to be shed. Like, it was surreal. As far as my brother, as far as my marriage, as far as a lot of things, I was about to get, you know, it really touched me deep. You know what I mean? And you, I have to commit, because I don't open up to everybody like that. You know what I'm saying? That's not something I like doing, like opening up. But when you talk to the right person and the right person seems genuine, and you gonna get the best, the results of a great interview. But it's real for me. You know what I'm saying? It was really, really real for me.
So tell me about this thing. Obviously, growing up in Philly, I know North Philly, hard life, hard upbringing, hard neighborhood. And yet you're a very chilled out and happy-go-lucky guy. How do the two things marry up?
I like to say that coming up in North Philly, right, you have to be hard. You have to be stern. You have to fight for everything. You know what I'm saying? Because you're giving nothing. Coming from my section of North Philly, you got to fight for everything because you're giving nothing. So my whole thing was, when I got older and I learned, you know, I used to walk around mad. I used to walk around mean with a chip on my shoulder and angry at a lot of things, because I felt like, you know, I want the same opportunities that other people have. Because not of North Philly. And I always be like, well, you know, I learned to say, yo, this is the hand you're dealt. This is the hand you're given. You got to play this hand. And you have to be, you know, nice about it. Because, you know, your friends is going through the same thing that you going through. So you got to make the best of this thing. And I've learned that. Just, you know, be humble, be grateful, and be diverse. And try to understand, like, you know, things. I was here for a reason, and it I think the reasons made me who I am today. So I learned to adapt to that and be grateful about, you know, my upbringing, because I could be totally doing something else. I could really be doing something else in life and bad things, but God, you know, turned me in the right direction and made a negative a positive.
Were you a daddy's boy or a mummy's boy as a kid?
Daddy's boy.
Everything. So did you idolize your dad? Obviously, your dad was Eugene Cyclone Hart, one of the biggest punchers of all time. I was going to say from Philly, but of all time, if you guys look at the stats. Did you idolize your dad? And was it because of his fighting background?
I just idolized my father because he was my father. Before I can really know who he was and what he'd done and what he accomplished in the sport of boxing, I wanted to walk and talk like my dad. Like, as a kid, before I knew anything about him, I just thought my dad was a pretty cool dad. I thought he was, like, a really pretty cool guy as far as who he was, how he talked, how he carried himself. you know, when he came in the house, how he talked, you know what I'm saying? How my dad moved in the house, you know what I mean? It was like he was a man. Like, I was raised by a man. He had no soft type of, you couldn't really, you know, he was a man, I'm gonna say that. I'm gonna just leave it at that. He was a man's man. Hey man, get in here and do your homework. Hey man, come on. We're gonna watch this. We're gonna do this. Come on, get ready for bed. You know, it's 8 o'clock. It's, you know, it's time we start getting ready for school tomorrow. My dad came in, laid down his hat, and he put the house in order. I think that's what being a man's man and a real father is about. Is really, really being there and being in the house with your kids. If you're not in the house with your family, it don't mean nothing. And my dad showed me that several times. But I admire that. I admire my father before I knew he was Cyclone Heart.
Yeah, so tell me about Cyclone then. And obviously you've gone back and done your homework and seen the highlight reels. When you look at your dad, he was a force to be reckoned with, right?
Absolutely. When I found out who my father was, it was from the older guys in the neighborhood. And they'd be like, yo, you Cyclone Heart, you know who your dad is? I used to be like, yo, you just my dad. What are you talking about? No, your dad can fight. Your dad can really, really fight. He was Cyclone Heart, that left hook. Everybody talked about his left hook. And I used to be like, yo, I don't even know what that is right now. You know what I'm saying? I have no recollection of what that is.
Yeah.
And I asked him, he said, yeah, I used to box. Your dad was a bad boy in there. And you know, you heard. He said, who told you that? I said, Mr. Raymond, Mr. Charlie. You know what I'm saying? All the old heads in the Bag Bird. Everybody in the neighborhood used to be like, yo, your dad is a bad dude when he come in that boxing. You know how to fight, champ? I used to be like, no, I don't know how to box, but I know how to fight. I'm going to hold my own. It's naturally there because I always had heart. But my father, man, when I asked him, could he box, that's when he started teaching me. He said, I'm going to teach you how to fight. You're going to be a bad man. You're going to be a bad dude. They're going to be talking about you like that. And I was like, for real? And I was 6 years of age. I was like, for real? He said, yeah, we're going to teach you. I'm going to show you how to fight. And ever since then, it was history, man.
Wow, so you were a willing learner. Like as soon as he dangled that carrot in front of you, you were like, yeah, I want to box.
Yeah, because I wanted that notoriety of people talking about me like that. I think that's what it was. I wanted that. I knew that's something I wanted. I wanted people to talk good about me. Everywhere I go in the city of Philadelphia, somebody always knows my father.
And I mean, he was part of that.
I can't go to a restaurant without an old head coming out saying, or somebody, or old timer coming out, yo, your dad's Cyclone Heart, you Jesse Heart, or they saying my credit card, he put my credit card down and they say Jesse Heart on it. Hey, you Cyclone Kid, you ever heard of Cyclone Heart? And it's just be like, things like that is inspirational. Like, I got something to uphold, I got a legacy to uphold, I got something to obtain. And I think it's beautiful. And I thought it was beautiful back then. I think it's beautiful now. And that's why I post my father. I'm like, you a bad dude. I'm like, it's my bloodline. I'm supposed to be this. And not saying that, you know, other fighters are not supposed to be that, but this is what we come from. This is what I come from. I come from boxing. I come from a fighter that was a good puncher. I come from that. My left hook supposed to be deadly because my dad left hook was deadly. It works out for the both of us.
And he came from Philly at a different time to you in the sense that Philly was really the fight capital. I remember Marvis Frazier saying to me once that Philly was the fight capital and he actually thought Joe Frazier's gym was the White House. But obviously during that point, you know, where Joe was wreaking havoc on the heavyweights, you had your dad, you had Benny Briscoe, you had Boogaloo Watts, you had Willie the Worm. You had all those guys. Kitten Haywood was coming to the end of the line. Got Gypsy Joe Harris. You know, these great characters. I mean, Philly, does part of you wish that you were around then when Philly was like what it was?
Absolutely. I wish I could have been born earlier. I always say that because I want to see how I would measure up against those great fighters. My dad always talked to me about, you know, Willie the Worm, Boogaloo Watts, Gypsy Joe Harris, Georgie Benton, the list goes on, man. There's so many. Jeff Chandler,
Saab Muhammad, Tyrone Everett.
Tyrone Everett. Never bad dude. Matthew Saab Muhammad. My dad always talked about all these guys. Ken Hayward, Sugar Hart. It was another good fighter that was from Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Again, man, it's so many fighters of Philadelphia that my dad always talked about. And he used to be like, yo, that was the golden era. And I used to be like, yo, I would love to have been there. You know what I mean? I would love, my dad used to tell me, guys used to come in, you know, drunk. Guys used to come in hungover the next day after being out, and they used to get in there and box 10 or 15 rounds like it was nothing. Like you could smell the aroma and the liquor coming off their breath and off their skin. But they said Gypsy Joe Harris was the great at it. He said he used to play pool sharp. You hear about these great fighters, like, damn, he was that good? Man, you throw water in the ring and couldn't touch him. Tyrone Everett was the fastest man with two hands back in the day. We had all these great stories about these men, and I just really wish I could have been there.
Yeah, sure. And you never got to fight at the Blue Horizon. Is that something you would have liked to have ticked off the list?
I would love to fight at the Blue Horizon. I keep saying that. I say that time and time again. My father, I dreamed about that. But, you know, I've been to some fights there. I've seen Derek Poole Ennis, Jerron Ennis brother fight there. I've seen a lot of Philadelphia. I've seen Outlaw fight there. Eric Hunter. I've seen Greg Hackett fight there. All fighters that like just barely turned pro before me. I've seen a lot of Philadelphia fighters fight there. And it was just very, very inspiring.
And you have, like your dad, you have worked with Russell Peltz as well, right?
No, I never signed with Russell. We did a co-promotion. He co-promoted one of the shows that I fought on with Top Rank. He called Bob Arum, and he co-promoted one show. And it was amazing, and it was a sellout, and it was beautiful.
Yeah, and then through your amateur career, you fought a whole host of big names getting to the top of the amateur game. Even though you guys are different in size, you boxed Sean Porter, and then there was Edwin Rodriguez, and you had a load of fights with Luis Arias. Who was the best guy that you faced in the amateurs?
Best guy that I faced in the amateurs? I'm gonna give that to... I'm going to give that to Sean Porter. He was the strongest competitor that I've ever shared ring with. And I know why, and I understand why. Because he was so strong and relentless. It was like this shirt guy would not give up. He will not waver. He will not, for three rounds, he will be all over you. And I think still to this day, I haven't fought anybody like that.
And then you fought over in Baku in Azerbaijan, and you just missed out on the Olympic trials when you lost to Terrell Gaucher, right?
Yeah, I won the actual Olympic trial. They had this thing called the reload, and they just messed that up Olympic year, and I was a part of that. So, and they say I lost by 1 point, but I believe I dominated the fight.
And that was there was no question you were going to wait another 4 years to go through that again, right? So that was it, turn pro.
No, I had to turn pro. It was no way I was going to wait another 4 years for the Olympics to come around. And no, everything happened at the right time. Everything was good. I got tired of the amateurs. The amateurs broke my heart after that decision.
Yeah, okay, that makes a lot of sense. And then when you turned over, how far did you think you could go? Did you think you'd go all the way and become a world champ?
I believed at the time, I believed it, and I believed I can do it. But in a sense, I didn't really see it. My dad saw it before I did. And I say that my dad saw it before I can see anything. Say, yeah, you're gonna be champion of the world. I said, Dad, I'm thinking like, okay, I just was about to have my child. Well, not just about to. My wife was pregnant, and I figured like, bro, how I'm gonna get money? Should I box? Should I not? This shit is it's so shaky. You never know if you won't get the decision that you deserve. And I thought about it. Top Rank call with a great offer. Al Haymon call with a great offer. Who else? Gary Shaw. Promoter that was really, really interested. Like, yo, what you doing? And and I was like, should I turn pro? Like that was my mindset. Should I really can I really do this? It's a whole different dynamic. And they came with a right deal, Top Rank. And I looked at all my options and Top Rank had the best option and he turned pro.
And I've read quotes from Bob Arum saying that he wasn't just a fan of you as a fighter, but he liked you as a person, right? You and Bob got on well.
Yeah, we was well, man, Bob still talks to this day. I text him on his birthday. He texts me back and he asked me how I'm doing and how's my daughter doing. It's never no bad blood with Bob. Bob's a good guy, as far as being a good guy, a good human being to me. I can't really say with who he is with anybody else, but Bob is definitely a good guy to me. Yeah, so definitely, me and Bob was definitely we got close over the year. He would give me a ton of advice. I have nothing bad to say about Bob Arum. To me, personally, he was a great guy.
And you turned over with your dad. Your dad's training you from the start, right?
Yes, my father, again, that's how I got into boxing. My dad, for real, for real. My dad trained me from the beginning, from the very beginning. There's pictures in my phone. It's man, my mom knows, everybody knows. My dad used to be hard on me. That's what people don't understand. That's why I would never let my child box because I know what it takes to be this good. I know what it takes to just even be number. I'm rated number three in the world right now by the WBO. I know what it takes. What that takes. I couldn't put my child through something like that. I couldn't put
It's
my child through getting up 5 this morning every morning, as I just did this morning. I can't put I can't. I don't even see myself doing it right now. As a kid. I can't put my children through that, those kind of vigorous training methods.
when you turned over, did you have a job or were you working, were you boxing full time?
Boxing full time, always boxing. Never had a job. Never had a second plan. Never had things that I believe I should have had. I should have had a dental plan. I should have had this, but no, my dad never really. We never really talked about these things.
You won a lot of pro fights early on, as in by a stoppage. Were you a natural puncher, or was that something you specifically worked on with your dad to get that power, or was it something that he just passed down hereditary?
We wasn't looking for knockouts. We wasn't looking for knockouts early on. I wanted to get the experience. But
Yeah.
I touch a guy and they go. That was inherited. I never tried to buy power. I never tried to force power. I never tried to be something that I wasn't. I never tried to do none of that. I always tried to. My dad said, "Yo, we gotta win. The main objective is to win. Win the fights. Win this." But when I touch them on the chin, they go to sleep every time. Like it'd be like, "Yo, Dad, I didn't even touch him that hard." I'd be like, and when he went out, hit him with the right hand, hit him with the left hook. When I put up my clips on the internet. I'm a diverse puncher. It could be the right hand, it could be the left hand. It doesn't matter. When it comes to boxing, far as with a left hook, with a straight right hand, an uppercut, whatever it is, I'm dangerous with any shot you put in. Body shot, I'm dangerous. I'm dangerous with any shot. So you got to really, really look at that and understand it. Like, they're just dangerous. You're a dangerous dude with either hand. So,
hey, so let me ask you this. You know, going back to those old days in Philly, we've heard the sparring stories of all these guys sparring with each other, you know, Benny Briscoe and Saad Muhammad and whoever you'd care to imagine. What's the sparring like in Philly like now? Is it are there wars everywhere, or is it evolved and changed a little bit?
It changed a lot. It's not that these guys, they don't want to get in there and box. They don't really want to box. You know, they don't want to spar like that. They don't want to get in there and go hard. Everybody's hot and a fighter, and I ain't letting them spar everybody. It changed. It evolved so much from that. It's so watered down. I remember when I was boxing, when I was coming up, my dad would take me everywhere. He raised me up under that old school mentality of, yo, you get in there, you go. And I would knock people out and I would damage people. And that hindered me today. I used to hurt people in sparring. And that hindered me today. Right now, it's like I can't get no sparring. I only get sparring from certain guys. Certain fighters won't even work with me because they feel like I still have that mentality, even though I've changed. But my dad brought me up under that type of regime, under that mentality. He embedded that mentality in me. So when I spar, they know it's going to be a war. How much you paying, Jeffrey? That's the first thing. How much you paying? Because if you try to hurt my kid and they'll be like, no, we're going to work, bring him in. And that's what it is.
You call that culture watered down. Are you for that watered down culture now? Like, do you think, you know, you mentioned the word damage there. Do you think that boxing has evolved and it kind of needs to look after their own? Obviously, some of the guys we've mentioned, like Jeff Chandler and Matthew Saad Muhammad, were badly damaged by the sport. Do you think it's a good thing that the culture's changed a little bit?
Yeah, and no at the same time. You can still work hard. You can still go hard without getting damaged and learning, because you can't learn how to really box unless you're in those positions, unless you're in that tough position. My dad put me in tough positions every time. My dad didn't care about a guy. My dad didn't care about a guy who was he trained by, how many fights he had with it, my son getting in there with him. That was my father's mentality. That was my father's mentality. I'm very grateful for that because it made me who I am today. And I can stand up behind it. And they know when I come, I don't care what's the guy weight, what he done, who he fought, what he did, I'm getting in there with him. And that's the mentality that I have to this day. These guys don't have that mentality in the city of Philadelphia no more. Oh, how much he weigh? How many fights he got? Well, would he do this? Well, would he do that? I seen a trainer tell me, I don't let my fighter spar everybody. Say, you don't let him spar everybody in his weight class? No, I don't let him box everybody. It's certain people. And I was like, yo, I don't even like that mentality. I don't even know what that's about. If my dad seen, if a guy was over, you know what I mean, it was my weight or over my weight, even if he's heavyweight, my dad put me in there with him. He'll get in there with him and box him. I was like, Dad, this guy, I don't care. We don't care nothing about weight. We care. You tell me what we care. We don't care nothing about it. It's going to make you sharp. It's going to make you alert. Get in there with it. And I would get in there with these big guys and these older guys. I would dominate. And it would be like, yo. It made me, and it enhanced who I was, who I am as a fighter.
So you had this run of wins over Mike Jimenez, Aaron Pryor Jr., Andrew Hernandez, and Alan Campos, and like they really helped you become a contender, right? They really helped you. You did, I think, 9 with Pryor, and because what you needed by that point was rounds under your belt, right?
Right. Them guys grew me to be a professional, far as going to rounds, far as knowing how to move in the rounds, far as Just homing the craft and homing the skill of really, really boxing and really, really solid boxing. I was getting them early knockouts. I never really, really was boxing. Like, I never really had to show my skill. But when I got in there with them guys, they made me show my skill. They upped my level and they upped my game, and it became, and it was beautiful to see the growth. It was beautiful to see the growth in me.
And then you have this first loss to Zurdo Ramirez, who's now currently the cruiserweight champ. This is down at 168, by the way. So he's packed on, obviously, 32 pounds. And it was close. Yeah. I think he scored an early knockdown, but it was really close on the scorecards. How tough was it to take that first loss?
It was tough. It was extremely tough. It was hard for me because I don't like to accept the defeat. My dad always say you fight, you win or you die. And anything was short of death if I lost was very disappointing. And I had that mentality. That's how my dad raised me up. Certain things you can't get away from when he was embedded in you. I was like, I woke up and I felt like shit. That's just to be honest. I really felt like a piece of shit. I just really felt. And people kept saying, yo, you did great. You fought a world champion with 30-something fights. What are you down for? Man, I ain't win. That's what I'm at. Man, you can't. Come on. You went in there and you went 12 rounds with the champion of the world. And not just any champion. He was the best guy in the division. The best guy at the time was Zurdo Ramirez at super middleweight. What are you so down about? You have nothing to hold your head down about. The scores was, if it wasn't for the knockdown, it could have been a draw. You could have won if it wasn't for that. And at the end of the day, right, you listen to these things and you say, damn, man, you got to get up. You come home to your child, come home to your daughter, and your daughter telling you different things. She's trying to, you know, brighten your day up. It was a bunch of love. It was a bunch of love. I can honestly say that. Love got me over that.
Well, you had three fights to come back, and you won all three of them in quite a straightforward manner, I think. And then you fight Zurdo again, and it's even closer. It's like from 2 points to 1 point, and it's a split decision, and it's a
majority decision.
Majority, my bad. And like it's even closer. So I guess you went into that thinking that you'd learned from the first one and you could make the adjustments and the improvements. And right. You would have taken that fight, and Top Rank would have made that fight in the knowledge that you were going to win, or feeling that you're going to win, right?
Right. In my heart, I believe I won a second fight. I watched the tape three times. There was one good round where I let up and he caught me a couple times, but I didn't go down, kept fighting. I believe I won that fight. You know what I'm saying? In my opinion. I believe I beat Zurdo Ramirez the second time. I don't see where I lost that fight. It was a couple good rounds he got, a couple good shots he got in. He fought good, but in my heart of hearts, I believe that second fight I won. I just didn't get the decision.
And this is what you want more than anything, right? You want to bring a world title back to the Hart family and have a, because your dad didn't win a title. Obviously, everyone knows that if he was around today, he would have claimed at least one of the titles. But that's what you want, to bring a title back to the Hart family.
That's the only thing I can do to take it further than my dad did. My dad did everything but win a world championship, and that's why I'm still fighting. My dad should say, you know, sometimes it takes a little bit longer to get so far. So, you know, sometimes it takes a little bit longer to get something that's so far ahead. And I was like, what, dad? What did that even mean? It might not be your time at that time. Everything works on God's timing. Everything is God's timing. You might not have it. It might not be in the plans for you to grasp it at that time. It might not be in the plans for you to grasp it at that time. When is your time, it'll come. And if it don't happen, you reach for the stars, and you have to be satisfied. You didn't just quit, because you could have quit 1,000 times, but you stayed in it. So I appreciate that mentality, and I appreciate that effort. But you know, I definitely want to win the world championship.
You beat Sullivan Barrera and then lost to Joe Smith, and again it was another close fight. Like, those are your three losses, and they've all been like by a point or two, like razor thin.
Right.
How did you see the Joe Smith one going?
Well, that fight, I really had I broke my hand in training camp. People don't even know I tore ligaments in my right hand in training camp. in sparring. I was sparring a kid by the name of David Stevenson. I don't know if you know him. He's a 168 pounder now. He's getting ready to fight. He's a good fighter. I was sparring him, and I hit him directly in his face, and I broke my right hand. He could vouch. That's another guy that was on the scene that can tell you, yo, no, Jesse's hand was broke. And he sparred me, and I broke my hand sparring him in training camp. And we was 2 weeks. I believe we was 2 weeks out or a week out. And, yeah, that's what happened with the Joe Smith fight. I didn't have a right hand going into that fight. We taped it up real good. I hit it real good. And it was bad. My dad always said the great fighters of the past can fight with one hand. You know what I'm saying? Muhammad Ali did it. Joe Frazier used to do it. This one did it. That one did it. You know what I'm saying? Do you want to fight? And I said, Dad, I don't care about this kid. I'm going in. The option was, my dad, he even said, I don't trust it. I said, look, you told me about all these people. You used to train me with one hand and things like that for these things to happen. You used to cover my right eye for no reason. You know what I'm saying? You would make me spin in a circle and get really, 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 really dizzy and see what I'm going to do and how I'm going to react to things like that. You trained me for these things. Come on, let me go in. I'm begging him. And he let me fight Joe Smith. Because I believe that I can beat Joe Smith with one hand. I didn't care. So we taped it up real good, and whatever happened, happened.
You've won five since, and you've obviously alluded to the fact now you're preparing for another title run, right? And I mean, obviously you were linked recently with David Benavidez, but that's what you want, right? You want one last run at the big time, right?
Absolutely. I'm seasoned now. I'm a seasoned vet. I like to call myself. I know what to do in certain situations in that ring. I know how to move in that ring. I've been in there with two devastating punchers, such as Risotto Ramirez and Joe Smith Jr. and my two losses. And I've never been knocked out. I've never been stopped. I've went in there with one hand. I've been through the trenches. I was cut badly in the Joe Smith fight as well, and I still survived it. I got through it. My body has no miles on it, for real, because I trained my body for certain things. My dad, I've really trained. So in the end result, it's not a lot of miles on his body. I live clean. So it's not a lot of miles on his body. It's just not. I believe I could beat whoever if you put me in there. With David Benavidez, I said, come on, let's go.
And it's a hot division, right? So Bivol, Beterbiev, Benavidez, David Morrell, like that's like 175 is busy. And is that your weight class now, or could you get down to 168, or would you even look up to 200 pounds?
We was talking about this just yesterday in the gym. My coach now, Greg Hackett, was saying, what you think about cruiserweight? I was like, Greg, I never fight cruiserweight. What are you talking about? He said, man, you never know. He said, you got the hype for it, but my body wouldn't be able to sustain 200 pounds. Like I'm truly a 168 pounder. I'm rated at 75. That's the only reason why I keep fighting at 75. WBO, Paco, WBC got me rated. So that's where we at. You know, none of the 68 pounders really wanted to fight me.
So how do you get over the line and win a world title? What's been missing?
What I believe what's been missing is the guidance of being smart, not using your heart so much, not having a big heart. Every time I watched the Zotto fight, I had more heart than I had skill. I had more, you know, grit and determination than I had. I used my brain as far as, why you do this? Because he hit me, I'm going to hit him back. I want to show that I'm more man than him. With Joe Smith, I want to show that I'm more man than him. When in these big fights, when I fight a guy who's good, I want to show that I'm this guy not so tough. This guy not so bad. But I don't do it smartly. And now, working now, I realized that I have to start using my brain. It's not about you know, using so much bravado in a sense of the word, is about using your smart.
Yeah, sure. And in terms of your career, how long do you see yourself fighting for? I know that you've got a job to do, but have you got a cutoff point?
If I would have got that Benavidez fight, I think I would have hung it up after that. You know, but in the end result, I didn't get that fight. So, you know, again, I just want one last run. Like you said, one last chance to have a big fight. And I'm in position to do it. Top Rank have reached out to me, and they told me about fighting Bitter BF next. Early, it was like right after he fight. Like, because, you know, I'm rated number 3 in the WBO, and he faced his mandatory. So he get to pick who he want to fight now. He don't have to fight. He already fought his mandatory, which was Dibble.
Yeah.
So he can pick out of the top 5 fighters who he wants to fight, and I'm in that conversation. And if they want to, if that fight happens, you know, I'll look forward to that. I'll be interested in a fight like that.
So yeah, two things. I heard that Bivol and Beterbiev, they've each talked, or in early talks, they've talked about maybe having one fight each before having a rematch later next year. So you could be Beterbiev's plus one before that, right?
Yeah. I'm in a conversation for that. You're definitely right. I'm in a conversation for that. And I'm not looking to be taken lightly. Top Rank knows me, and they know it's an easy fight to make. And they know that I will be looking nothing before this. Nothing but this. This guy better be if he could punch. But I seen that last fight, he slowed down. He don't like movement too good. That's in my opinion. He don't like nobody to move on their legs too much. I seen that. If you get stagnant, or if you stand there, if you try to plant your feet and insert your feet and fight this guy a little bit, that's when you're going to get hurt. That's when he can break you up in there. That's when the power becomes. But if you move and box and you don't stay there, or no, and you turn them and you do the different things you need to do and fight at the same time, I believe you could beat him. At the end of the day, I'm great at. My legs are still good. I jump rope every day. I train hard every day. I use my legs every day. My legs haven't gave out on me. I'm 35. Beterbiev is about to be a 40-year-old man. I would love nothing more but to get in there with him. And I think he slowed down a lot. I don't know with Bill, I don't know what it was, but it looks to me like Beterbiev slowed down a tad bit. It was like he slowed down just a little bit. And I seen the things where he would pick it up in the past. Now it's just a tad bit. It's just a pull. So I would love to fight Beterbiev. If that fight really presents itself.
Did you enjoy watching that fight of Beterbiev Bivol?
Absolutely, it was a masterpiece. To me, because the bull and the matador, we had to see which guy was still going to be, what the world was watching, you know, which guy was going to win. And I seen a lot of things that Beterbiev didn't like a guy to give him lateral movement and hit him off the move, then grab him. You know, that was frustrating to him. He was getting frustrated in there. It was only when Bivol set, when Bivol implanted his feet in the canvas and put his high guard up, that's when Beterbiev was really punching on him and giving it to him. But if you look at it, movement played a big part in a while. Beterbiev didn't get a knockout, and his performance was very, very mediocre.
And tell me about Benavidez. You and I were messaging a bit, and then the Benavidez fight was being discussed, and you went quiet. And I figured it must be pretty close, or something must be going down, because we, like I said, we were messaging, and then you went quiet, and I was like, someone's been told not to say anything. Was it close?
I don't know. I have no recollection. I always say a fight is signed when you get a contract. I keep saying it. When I get a contract, that's when we close. That's when I know it's close. That's when we can negotiate. That's when things going on. I believe my name was doing a pot, and I believe he said it was a possibility that I could be fighting Jesse Hart. And the powers that be, Al Haymon, he tried to make the kid fight. And, you know, I said, for the right price, I get in there with anybody. It doesn't, you know, just make the business right, and we can go. They made the, it was close. I've heard that it was close. And he just went a different way.
Okay. By the way, how good is Boots, and how good is Boots for the city?
Boots is great for the city. Boots have a lot of characteristics. Whereas though he can fight, he's good. Jaron Ennis can fight. The kid can fight. He comes from a fighting family. He's great for the city. He's phenomenal.
And in terms of your motivation now, obviously, I know you said about, you know, wanting to bring a title back to your family. Obviously, your family changed through trauma in 2010. I suppose the motivation is as well to win something for the family, not to give them something to positive, because you guys have had so much trauma back in 2010, right, that you guys had to cope with.
Yeah, when you look at that 2010 thing, it was a very, very hard loss. I look at that as a loss. My brother, look at that. You think about that, and you hone that, and you try to give a positive narrative to the family, and not look at that as something so negative, because we're all still dealing with that kind of. That loss from 2010, even myself, I never wanted nothing more than to. How can I say this? I never wanted nothing more than to. Get a day back with my brother that we lost, my oldest brother. I believe that haunts me still when I see his grandchildren. My niece's sons, I get haunted. When I see his children, period, it's still hard for me, very, 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 very hard to deal with that in a sense. It's very hard. A lot of people will never know the trauma that I suffered, that I endured for that. That's still something that I've dealt with and I have to cope with throughout life, and it hurts.
Because the whole thing was just unjust, right? So obviously you talked about you maybe being a certain type of way when you were a kid and a bit of a tearaway or a guy who would put on a front. But your brother, who was, he was known as Damon, right? But was called Robert. He was a nice dude, wasn't he? And it was he was killed senselessly. Like,
yeah, great guy, gave you the shit off his back. The guy that killed him, my brother gave him clothes to kill him. So it wasn't, I don't understand. I still don't understand it. You can take care of a fella like this. You can give him clothes. You can give him money. You can look out for him and still kill you. It just didn't add up to me. You still going to do this to me? After I give you all this, I give you what you asked me for. I look out for you. You going to do this to me? So it was like, it was just really, I don't understand it. That's what took me out. You see how good of a guy you were, and you still do that to him. It didn't add up to me. And I think that's one of the things that still hurts me, still haunts me. You know what I'm saying? It's still a lot of anguish there. It's still a lot of, you know, adversity that I face throughout the day with that. Yeah, man, it's hard. It's really, really hard. And it's, to touch on that subject, it just be like, dang, I just wish I'd get one day back. At the end of the day, I wish I'd get one day back.
Hey, so how much do you owe boxing as a channel and as an outlet for the trauma? You know, people talk about boxing being banned and the negatives and the politics and the dirty business and stuff, but it gives people like you a purpose and a path as well, right? And a channel. How much did you throw yourself into boxing in the aftermath of your brother being shot?
I threw my whole life in it because I needed it. I needed boxing more than boxing needed me at that time. I needed it as an outlet. I needed to channel my energy into something else different because I was on a path of destruction. And again, boxing saved my life. At that particular time, boxing saved me. It wasn't the people around me. It wasn't my mom saying this, my dad saying that. You know, boxing saved me. My whole existence. My wife, at the time, she was really, really, like, on me about different things. And, you know, she helped me through that situation. And it was many days where I just want to sit and cry. Like, after the funeral, after the recap, after he'd been buried in the ground, it was many days where I used to sit in the room and just cry. And she would be there, and she would, and through that trauma, through that sense of death and dark time, she was amazing through that for me. I can say that. I never got therapy for that. You know, boxing was my only outlet for that. And I think I should have got therapy. I should have got the proper help I needed to cope with that. But I didn't, you know. Boxing was my therapy. Boxing was my savior. Boxing was this. I came in and I said, I'm going to wreak havoc on the boxing world. I said, that's going to be my revenge.
Did you feel a certain type of way in the gym? Like, did you feel like it was an outlet? Did you feel that without boxing, you would have gone crazy? Not trying to put words in your mouth, but do you feel like, geez, that was that kept you centered because you had that to physically release the anger?
Absolutely. It was times I would hurt guys in the gym and people would scream, Tom, hold it, Tom. And I was like, I ain't stopping until I would, like, and that mentality, like, damn, just you can't kill these guys. What are you doing? You trying to, what are you, man, he getting paid. He want the money, I want his head. I don't care nothing about if he, because this we would have to pay for sparring when I turn pro. And I was like, he want money, I want his head. I want to take his, I want to knock his head off. I want people to feel like how I feel. And I tried to inflict as much pain on fighters as I felt inside myself. Or I tried to inflict as much pain on a heavy bag as I felt inside myself. When I ran, I tried to not breathe. Like, I tried to, I'm gasping for air and I'm still going as fast as I can because I wanted to get all that out me. Everything I wanted to get out me, that anguish. And it used to be times where I would sit and I would cry because I would wake up alive. You know what I'm saying? My brother's dead and I wish I could trade that place with my brother.
Yeah, there's. It's funny because, you know, when you say something like that, until you've been in a situation like that, you don't. It sounds like it's all talk, right? Until you've been in that situation. My son was taken into hospital earlier this year, and he had something wrong with him, and literally my first thing was, look, just take me in instead, and whatever it is, let me have it. And let him be all clear, right? You just want to, switch positions, right?
Yeah. And the end result, right? I'm here. Yeah. I'm healthy. I just wish me, God just do things. They leave people. And he leaves people here that everything you do for a reason, man. And I don't have nothing. I want my knowledge, God.
Yeah. Jesse, I mean, And the thing is, as well, I mean, when you talk about the therapy and stuff, is that that's still something you can revisit, right? You still have all that stuff inside, like that's still something that you can go to. Oh man, I feel for you, Jesse. I do. I feel for you, buddy.
What was the question?
See, I said, like, therapy's still a thing, right? That's still something you can go to. You've got that stuff in the basement, right? That you can go and get out of therapy. Is that something that you would consider?
I tried it, and I just really feel like it's not for me. Like, it's not that. It ain't work. It ain't change how I feel. Change nothing. It ain't change how my outlook on that situation. It ain't change. It ain't change nothing.
It doesn't fix the situation. My
heart still feel like it's the same way. I still feel like I'm just really inside, I'm really hurt about that subject, about that situation. I'm still in all hurt. And I think it's been 14 years since 2010. Yeah. And I'm still hurt. It still ain't go away. I still mourn that death. I still mourn that loss. I still cry about it like I just did. I'm historical. Talking about that situation still. And, That subject is really, really a bad subject for myself. I try every day to get over that. I try every night to look on the bright side of things. And that shit just don't go away. It just don't.
I suppose this is why boxing is a therapy, right, in a way, because when you're in there and someone's trying to take your head off, you're not thinking about anything else, about what's happening right in front of you, right?
Right. I'm not thinking about what's inside. I'm thinking about, you know, it's therapeutic for me to get away from my own thoughts. Like Mike Tyson said one time, his thoughts fuck with him. His thoughts fuck with him, and he wants to do something, and why don't you go do this to that guy? And why don't you go do this to that guy? I feel that. I feel that sometimes in my body. I know I understand what Mike Tyson is saying. Why don't you go grab him and spit in his face and inflict as much pain on him that you feel in yourself right now? You be like, yo, this guy didn't even do nothing. Yeah, but he's a bad. He thinks he's tough. Go in there and lean on him. You'd be like, man, my thoughts get the best of me if it wasn't for boxing.
There'll be so many people who listen to this that want a happy ending for your story, that want to see you with a world title around your waist. Like, it just seems, it seems a fitting part of the journey, right? You can't have, you know, there's a lot of movies in boxing and a lot of things that should have been movies, but this is a movie where you end up, you know, you have the capacity to have a feel good ending for the whole family, right?
Absolutely. But I just really feel like every time I speak on that subject, every time I talk about that, it's still that thing in that basement, that hurt, that anguish, that larceny in your heart. You get something, you know, you lost something that you could never get back. You know, any type of mistakes you made, you can't undo those mistakes. But if your brother, I feel like my brother was here, I would have never made these certain mistakes. Things like that would have never happened. So I'm definitely, you know, definitely going to be pushing to win a world title. We tried to get fights, you know. Currently, you know, I'm fighting November 22nd in my hometown of Philadelphia, in North Philly. There's a couple names that came up. And I'm fighting this kid. I don't even know his name. Luna or something. I don't know. But we tried to get a kid by the name of, well, he called for me, actually. Anthony Sims Jr.
Okay.
You ever heard of him?
Yeah, I've heard of him. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we tried to get, he called for me, and I immediately agreed to the fight. And he just stopped picking up the phone. And that's a fight that, them are the type of fights I need. I need big fights now. And it's not David that, because if I don't get a big fight, right, I'm going to really hurt somebody. I need somebody that can stand up to what I have and what I have in this basement, because I'm going to fight hard every time.
Yeah.
And that's where it is at. And I know myself. I know who I am. I know what life made me become. And then the end result, November 22nd is a big start to that. But I want to fight. I'm here to fight. I'm not done yet.
Hey, Jesse, you're super interesting. You're really engaging. You've got that mean mugshot on BoxRec. You, whenever we touch base, you smile and you're happy, but you've obviously got layers and you're an incredibly deep guy to speak to. And it's not, I'm pleased we're in touch. And, you know, I kind of hope that even speaking to me helps you get some of the stuff out of the basement and off your chest a little bit.
Yo, it do, man. It do. Every time I talk to you, man, it be a therapy session. I feel like it's just gonna be an interview. It'd be an interview for you. I know it's business, but you force me to engage in these conversations and these topics that I don't engage in. You know what I'm saying? That I'm the no go zones that I'm scared to touch subject, touchy subject. And you ask the questions for me to bring it out, and I don't know whether I'm answering it honestly until my answer comes out, and I think that's therapy for me. And well, I appreciate you for that, brother. I appreciate you for that. I do. I don't know what's going to come out until it comes out, and then when it comes out, the emotion comes behind it, the intensity comes behind it, the tenacity, the of your question to engage, it comes out every time. And you I think this is good for me, man. This is great. Well, thank you.
Man, thank you. I don't know why it is I've gravitated towards you. I don't know if it's the Philly thing or what, but you know, there's a reason why I feel like we're in touch, and I feel like there's a reason why I don't know, it's weird. It's one of those things, you know, I've obviously done the podcast with a lot of people, but like, you know, I feel there's a reason why we're in touch, man. So I'll right. be pulling for you, and I'm you know, I'm hoping that the story gets the sign off that it needs and deserves, man.
Thank you so much.
A hell of a lot.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate you for talking. And before the fight, I would love to do this again with you. November 22nd, I'm fighting at the Lear Court Center in North Philadelphia, in my hometown city. You can come. It's streamed live on pay-per-view. I'll put that information out there on all my social media platforms. If you can tune in. It's going to be a great night of boxing, exciting night of boxing. And again, I'm looking forward to touch base with you before the fight. You know what I mean? And we talk about things.
Thanks, Jesse. Look, I really appreciate you making the time. I know we missed each other a whole bunch, but man, thank you. I'm grateful, Jesse. And keep in touch, okay?
Thank you. All right. Thank you, brother. Keep in touch.
Take care, man. Take care. Bye-bye. All right.
Bye.
Well, that was great stuff with Jesse. Hugely emotional. There's not a lot I can say to add to that other than I did wish I was there. It's probably up with the Glenn Rhodes podcast, up with the most emotional that I've felt on my own podcast. The feedback on Patreon has been really good about Jesse and how sort of sharing he was, and it's just such a tragic story, and my heart goes out to him every time we talk, because he's clearly hurting, and I just wish that things were better for him. Before I leave you, obviously I've started uploading future episodes to Patreon. Up there already, I've got an interview with historian George Zeleny, with the brilliant Australian Jason Maloney, with boxing attorney Kurt Emhoff, with former light heavyweight contender Mark Prince, and with former world heavyweight champion and light heavyweight champion Michael Mora. They are all available up on my Patreon at patreon.com/TrisDixon. Huge thanks for taking the time to listen. Normally I'll give the last word to the listeners and thank them, but huge thanks to Jesse Hart for being Jesse Hart. That was more than, and I'm hugely grateful to Jesse for sharing his story, and hopefully it helps others who are coming to terms with grief and hearing his story and hearing how he's trying to cope. I've got so much time and respect for Jesse Hart. Huge thanks to Jesse Hardwork Hart.